وندي مثلا will allow you to respond on the questions that have been raised and comments thereof.
So Chair, I'll start with trying to answer some of the easy questions. I'll leave the difficult ones to my two colleagues. But let me just start off with the issue of the NHLS serving approximately 80% of the population that you raised. Maybe there was a slight misunderstanding. I mean, the NHLS provides a public service to the majority of the people, and the 20% is in fact served by private industry. So there are a number of, I'm sure you're aware of the fact that there are a number of private laboratories that work in private hospitals that serve the 20% of the population. I mean, our laboratories do reach into if you want to call it the sort of deep rural areas. There are facilities where specimens are collected from deep rural areas and then taken to the closest depot or to the closest lab. So I think we do have excellent coverage. So nobody in the public sector is denied access to a laboratory test, be it from a small clinic or district hospital. With respect to the issue of NAFISA, I mean, the board no doubt supports the creation of NAFISA. This has been discussed extensively. The board has made a number of recommendations with respect to the evolution of the Act. We're now waiting for the final outcome. It's been discussed quite extensively within, especially the NICD and the NIOH that will form the crux of NAFISA. There is support by the leadership within the NICD and NIOH, as well as staff. I think that there is definitely a need for more discussion, and we'll certainly pick it up with the executives in terms of the issue around change management and the uncertainty, you know, in terms of reporting lines and so forth. So I think that's an important issue that we will have to pick up. But I think the concept of NAFISA is not in any dispute by especially the board, as well as the people who work within the entities that will be transferred into NAFISA. Obviously, there's the issue of uncertainty and so forth, but I think it's something that we need to manage and be a little bit more proactive about. The issue around the scientists is the numbers of scientists dropping is worrying, and I was just saying to the CEO, now I'm not entirely sure, you know, whether we actually have a proper roadmap for the scientists, because, you know, if you look at the 2011-2012, there's been quite a significant decline. So was that due to the fact that there were too many scientists in the system, and that there was a decision then taken at that time by the leadership to decrease the numbers? If you look at the last 3 years, the numbers have increased slightly in the last three financial years, all right? So it's something that we need to interrogate and feed back to you specifically. I don't think it will not impact on the NHI, because the scientists are not at the coal face in terms of doing the tests in the laboratories. The crux of the NHI in terms of the workforce are the technologists. They do the work in the laboratories, be it in a small, and many of the small laboratories, in fact, are run by technologists primarily. There are no pathologists there. So they're the workforce of the NHLS, and they do the work. The scientists are the more sort of academic researchers linked with the universities, linked within the NICD, where they do a lot of research as well. So while that is a specific issue that we need to look at in terms of numbers, and we need to get clarity, and we'll certainly provide you feedback within the next, you know, few weeks about that, I can assure you it will not impact on the NHI at all. Okay. linked to that is the question you raised, Chair, about our strategy moving forward, and I agree with you. I mean, I think this has come up at the NAPC, the National Academic Pathology Subcommittee within the NHLS. It's about recruitment of new, young, talented people, especially people who come from disadvantaged backgrounds, who come from rural backgrounds and so forth. So there's been a lot of discussion around that. I don't know all the chapter and verses of the discussion, but again, we can provide you feedback. I know that a few years ago, there was a wonderful program that was run by the NHLS that reached out to schools. They specifically reached out to schools. It was a national program. And I think I'm talking about 4 or 5 years ago, where there was a national program going to schools, especially schools in disadvantaged rural areas, to try to encourage young people who were in grade 10, 11, you know, talk to them about what does it mean to become a technologist, what does it mean to become a scientist, what does it mean to become a pathologist, for those who have aspirations to become specialists and so forth. So I think certainly we'd relook at that and take your advice, and we need to strategize for the future. Very definite about that. The issue around research in the NHLS, so research is not a core function of the NHLS. I mean, if the access support research, right? But we don't fund research per se. The research money comes from external agencies, like, for example, the MRC, or the Gates Foundation, or the National Institutes of Health in the States. Or it comes from commissioned work, like from the Clinton Foundation, or the Centers for Disease Control. So that's where most of the funding for the research comes from. The funding that's provided to NHLS per se comes from external agencies, as well as from the NHLS, the National Health Research Trust, which is an independent group, autonomous group. It's called the NHLS Trust, but the NHLS have no control over the trust. The trust itself funds research within the NHLS, and I know for a fact that 2 years ago, because I'm also part of the university leadership, and each university, all the 26 universities that have health science faculties, have membership on the trust. And we made a conscious decision to support the previously disadvantaged institutions and to support young, upcoming black researchers. So, you know, we don't have the data here, Chair, but we certainly can give you the data as to how the trust has spent its money over the last 3 to 5 years, because the reports are all there and we can forward it to you. And if you go to the members of the portfolio committee to show how the trust has supported research within all the universities, and in particular the previously disadvantaged universities, and also in terms of the individuals who they've supported. You know, and the idea about the trust is that it encourages young people. So, you know, experienced old geriatrics like myself, you know, we excluded from funding. But it's trying to fund the young people with respect to research. So I'll pause then, pass it on to the CEO, or the CFO will talk to some of the issues around the funding questions.
Thank you, Chair. I will first start with the bank account. At March, we had...
Sorry, CFO, can you...
Oh, sorry.
At March, Chair, we had 739 million. That's correct. That was money physically with a banking institution. The reason the money was there is because of the timing difference, where you find that an expense is incurred, is paid after 30 days, or is paid when the invoice is delivered, depending on the terms of payment also that affects. So you find that by the time you close the year, it doesn't mean that there's an extra money. It does mean that the money has been committed, but due to the timing differences, then you have the money in the bank account. The question of are we a profit-making institutions? The answer, Chairperson, we've got one shareholder which is government. We serve the South African citizens. We are not a profit-making organization, but maybe the question is, why are we then reporting a surplus which has grown from 180 million to 279 million? The answer is also due to the timing differences. Sometimes it's very difficult to balance your revenue with your expenditures. There are some timing differences that comes there. You find that the ideal situation is not to go to a deficit. That is why, then, if you look at our revenue generated, or which are the expenses of the provinces in terms of laboratory services, we're talking about 7 billion. And the net surplus we reported, it only constitutes less than 5%. So obviously the balancing is also taken into account by Chairperson. Chairperson, on the issue of emphasis of matters with regards to our financial statements, the auditors gave us an unqualified audit opinion where they said we are fairly presented, so that's why we're able to take these accounts to this committee. We're fairly presented, we're in compliance with PFMA, we ran our business using the sound principle. However, they said the accounts that were given to them to audit in May had to be changed. The reason they had to be changed, Chairperson, I will make an example with regards to the money that is owed to us by provinces. At the end of the financial year, we had 1.1 billion that was not collected. Obviously, the money that is not collected, it also includes the accountant's general queries, which we are currently resolving. And that money then, Chairperson, we then made a judgment and said more than 2 billion of that money, we may not be able to recover, either because it's been long outstanding or because of what we are observing in terms of our deliberations with the provinces. Obviously, when the auditor comes, the auditor might arrive at a different conclusion. Then we'll sit with the auditors depending on the facts that are put on the table. The auditor may say, increase the provision, impair this debt by more. So that is what is being referred to in terms of the statement we gave to them for audit had to be changed. Another issue, Chairperson, is that if I were to make one example in the current financial year, one of the provinces have already exhausted their allocation for laboratory services. We are in the middle of the financial year. They have exhausted their allocation. If I were to make another example, another province is paying us a fixed fee. They are spending more than 121 million. They are paying 82 million. At the end of the financial year, now then the money that they've not been paying is going to be reflected there as outstanding money that needs to be collected. Now a judgment then needs to be made to say, are they going to be able to pay us in the following year, or should we provisionally write off this amount as uncollectible? So those are judgments, are estimations that management have made, which then lead to disagreements. But those are disagreements in terms of what is being presented here, were amicably resolved with the auditors. On the issue of irregular expenses, Chairperson, last year we reported a full-page list of irregular expenses. and the total amount was 341 million. And this year we are reporting 28 million. The 28 million, Chairperson, I would like to go in detail. But before I touch on the 28 million, I would like to talk about the electronic filing the CEO was talking about, which is an initiative we are currently implementing. Because what we have discovered, especially resulting from transition, where employees leave, a new employee come, then you find that a document which was there or the corporate memory is lost. So that is why now we are moving to ECM, Enterprise Content Management, where the information is no longer going to be physically filed, it's going to be electronically filed, so that the people who come after us and the people who come after them, they'll be able to find the documentation. On the issue of the 28 million Chairperson, it basically refers to a pilot project that was funded by one of our grantors. And that pilot project, Chairperson, if you just allow me a second, that pilot project was to do with trying to prevent mother to child infection, especially the inborn babies, if they are born from mothers who are HIV positive. There was a pilot project that was funded by grantor. That pilot project ended now in June 2016. And there was one supplier of reagents. And that supplier was appropriately contacted to us. And they were able to show the auditors, here's the contract. Is one supplier who supplied these reagents for this pilot cryptococcal antigen lateral flow. So there's this one supplier, but this supplier has been in our system, and the auditor said, show me how did you appoint this supplier? That is where then the corrective action we are currently implementing now to say, let's have this enterprise contact management, because this supplier is a sole supplier. He's the only one who supplied the reagents. And now that is where otherwise, if it was not separated because of this supplier, we are going to come here and boldly and proudly say to you, there are no irregular expenses. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I'll also continue with the questions that have not yet been addressed. There was a question on the Swiss Prestige Award as to what benefit, and I wanted to show that the benefit, actually benefits are numerous. One of them, we'll be able to show this. One of them is being given the opportunity to utilize the logo. We have that permission to utilize their European quality logo on whatever communication materials we produce. It's a better thing for an organization. If you look at private companies, whenever they are doing something, it sort of gives higher status. If below your letterhead or something, then you will show you have a Standard Bank behind you, you have this. The more the companies, the more we respect you. So this is one of the benefits of the Swiss Awards. We are the only in Africa, in the African continent. I think also Ghana has that earlier because of another research institute where they got this. But it's an integrity, it's a prestigious logo that says you have the standing, you are in good standing order with the international organization. It's just one of them. The other one we cannot meet. I get invited now and then, but because of the pressure of work, you cannot be forever traveling abroad. But we have access now into their forum. Chair, the next one was the reason for the staff, the exodus in 1415, and whether we have found out why and what we're doing about it to avoid such occurrence going forward. The reasons were numerous. Some of them, I'm told, people were not sure about their tomorrow. This is when NHLS funds were dwindling. Members will recall that by November 2014, there was not enough money for the salaries, etc. It was 79 million, which could hardly cover, you know, suppliers were no longer paid. Naturally, people will say, do I still have a job in this organization? Will I be paid next month? And they left. So those were some of the reasons, but of course there were issues of salaries as well, and most of them, actually, there was only one way from NHLS, and that was to the private sector. And there they found better remuneration. That's why we had no choice but to also address our salaries. So going forward, it's to make sure that the NHLS is stable, and that's why we are emphasizing stability, because that talks to our employees. Can they proudly say, I have a job? You know, they need to feel that I have a job. Most of them are young, you know, newly married. They need to have that comfort of saying, I'm working for a stable organization. So that's the reason there. Now, I'm skipping those that were addressed. Yes, program 4 and 5. Actually, program 4 from Honorable Member Holmick. The unrealistic targets, were they really unrealistic? That I opened the annual report that I presented here on the 14th of October 2015. Now, going to that program specifically, the same targets were not achieved there in 1415. And we discussed at large. I remember members saying, why do you put targets that you know very well you won't achieve? So those targets, I want to agree with the member, the honorable member. Those targets are not necessarily unrealistic. They were unrealistic then, the environment then, because if a target was not achieved in 1415 and you come to 1516, it's still a challenge. There were problems, and we don't want to underestimate them then. But things have changed now, and that's why I'm saying, come the next year, this time, for 1617, we will be presenting a different picture. You know, same targets. The environment has changed somewhat. Now, the cervical smear, yes, I want to agree with the honorable member. 48% is very worrying, and indeed, I personally encountered various groups coming to me, including the, what is this group about HIV AIDS, what are they called now? And TAC, the TAC, local TAC from the, they call themselves from the Gauteng branch or something like that, came to see me. You know, they filled the boardroom and they said, we are worried about cervical smear turnaround time. And they were right. Their concerns were right. I took them very seriously, started to monitor the program, what is going on. The issue of staff shortages were identified. We had lost many cytotechnologies. And that is one discipline which is basically labor intensive. There's no automation there. At present, we are changing things, but at present, they go through one slide, reading one by one. We had to implement, Chair, some drastic measures, including incentives for weekends. People were paid for processing like Sunday and Saturday at home and otherwise. Those that we could guarantee quality. Experience, the other challenge, on phytotechnology, you don't qualify this year and then we trust your results. That's the serious challenge. You need experience. So juniors, I mean, we're talking cervical cancer. We can't afford mistakes here. There are juniors who are there but cannot be trusted with the final diagnosis. So indeed, it's an area of concern, but things have improved now. We will actually will present a different picture next year. I just don't have space. I could share them with you. There is, it's a different thing now. We have moved. Now, program 3 and 4 was also raised by Honorable Member Ndaba. I think it also alluded to the KPIs that were not achieved. Chairperson, I would like to indicate that I did apologize upfront that the APP was really not thought through. So some of them cannot, you saw those with 0-0. Should you bring that thing to such a forum? No. Embarrassing, and I apologize. But because the minister had signed for it, the external auditors audited, we got a non-compliance or compliance, do you call it that, CFO, on this APP from the external auditors that they came. Your indicators are not measurable, they are not specific, they are not smart. So yeah, we acknowledge the weaknesses. The registration of properties. I'm very pleased, Chairperson, to indicate that NHLS has got its own registered properties. I have title of deeds, the latest one being our famous Bramson Bay. It took many years. If I remember well, when I was my last previous 5 years at NHLS, 2003 to 2008, this was an impossible mission. It's done. It's continuing to be done. We're picking them up one by one. We didn't realize how many we have. We actually have properties, including empty land just behind us, a place called Lindhurst. So the strategy is, what can we do about that land? We have property and we're still going on. The challenging one is the one in here in Cape Town, Green Point. Yeah, that one is uphill. I've had meetings with people from the municipality, public works, from here in Cape Town. We're still discussing on the way forward. There are many scenarios where they want to move us to another place, somewhere next to Vincent, what hospital, private hospital, Vincent. Yes, so we haven't found each other, but we're still discussing. I'll pick the one with the KPIs, I think, after I said. Chairperson, I think that brings to the end the items raised, unless there is one that members feel we haven't responded to. There is one which can be raised, because indeed we were scribbling, so it's possible to skip one. Thank you, Chief.
I think the one that we skipped was the issue of board accountability. I mean, there's no doubt that I think the board, I've been a member of the board, new board for the last year, and I think the board has worked very well. It's a new board, a few old board members. It's got good representativity from a range of stakeholders, both in gender, race, and in different categories. I think the board has worked very, very hard in terms of ensuring that the NHLS is now floating well, not going to hit an iceberg very soon. I think the fact that the CEO and the CFO did the presentation is testimony to the good work that they've done. obviously take the responsibility at the end of the day. The issue around the question that you raised, or your honourable member raised, about the students and the exam, I mean, this has become a sore point. I mean, it's a big issue now, generally speaking, not only around the scientists. I mean, it's an issue at UCT, Stellenbosch, how students are assessed in terms of the exam, be it a written exam, oral exam, clinical exam, and so forth. And it's been one of the sore points that has created quite a lot of anxiety among students, as well as antagonisms between staff and students. Certainly, we as a board obviously have no responsibility in terms of that process, because you know we don't enroll the students. I mean, the students are enrolled by the universities or by the technicons, and the universities' technicons have their own exam boards and have their policies. But I think you're right in the sense that we have a responsibility to the people that we employ on the platform, and it's something that we need to engage with. And certainly, I think the people who sit on the board and have academic affiliations do that within their own institutions. But I think we need to be a little bit more vocal about supporting the people that work within the NHS. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Before you say, I think it's going to be important. Now, yesterday, the South African Council for Medical Research was here, who announced. But what we appreciated is that each and every one, discipline or whatever of the board was represented. And among other things, it shows, and I'm not implying that the NHLS board is not taking the role of Parliament seriously. When we close, I will on behalf of the committee, I will reflect on what I think is important, because what Honorable Ndaba raised is very important. Because at the end, those are the people that are to ensure that they provide leadership to the and account. So I'll just comment. I thought it's important what we're raising, but again, that you are alone as because they are ex officio members, I would say it all before, but they are board members that has been appointed by the committee. When the committee is calling the NHLS, it is our view, strongest view that but as I'm saying, when we close, we will then explain now what we think that in moving forward we are going to do. So,
okay, thank you, Chair. Mine is around the board, but
sorry, so that you don't come back. Honorable Volmik, just to allow for the thing they
yeah. Thank you, Chair. There are two questions that arose from the replies that you gave. One of them is about the NHI, that you know the NHLS has got nothing to do with or whatever with the NHI, and I think that ideal clinics should have at least a modicum of a laboratory or a diagnostic ability to do some diagnostic test that does not need a lot of financial outlay, and that's number one. And number two, we have a lot of registrars, and registrars are supposed to be taking the interns through their apprenticeship, making sure that they get proficiency in what they are doing. You talked about pap smears, nobody being trusted to look at the malignant cells in that and be able to say, yeah, this is positive or negative. But you do have interns or people who are not yet experienced. The duty of the registrars is to take them through that to gain that expertise, isn't it? Now, all this it works towards making these services available to everybody everywhere, not having to take them from Petson or Rutter to Buffalo Smith, Ian's Court, Mortimer, Fesquick, Fontaine. That is not the idea of an ideal health services that are accessible to all. So maybe I didn't get the reason why NHLS is not part of NHI, and of course skilling a lot of people to be able to be deployed to those NHI facilities would be what is expected.
I thought the deputy chair would say yes, yes, medical technologists vis-a-vis pathologists. So that's where they said medical technologists, they agree that they have got a role to play in the NHI, but pathologists. Okay, that's an argument at another time, but I just wanted to clear this, that they didn't say. Honorable Volmik.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just thank you for the responses, and I know that there are additional ones, but I just want to come back to the funding issue, because I think this is very important. I mean, we're obviously living in a very constrained fiscal environment. It affects all of us. It affects certainly the NHLS. You speak about, for example, the fact that there's a problem with recruitment turnaround time because of austerity measures within the organization. So we're all feeling it. And it brings me back to the question that was asked around the Gauteng issue and the KZN issue, and there were some explanatory points, but it wasn't, I think, elaborated as well as we need to. Because we obviously have to look at what's happening in the provinces, how the equitable share is being squeezed, the consequences we see on the ground when you do oversight, for example, in terms of human resource cuts. And our provinces are owing you and are being owed. It makes it very difficult for them to function on the ground. So maybe, I mean, if we can get some further explanation on that, but also as a suggestion going forward, in the future presentations, if you have just one slide with all the provinces and just what the current status is in terms of payment, with one or two explanatory notes, then we can investigate and interrogate that province by province, whether it be KZN, Gauteng, Western Cape, Eastern Cape. But just maybe in terms of the way forward, it concerns me because the CFO was speaking about the fact that already there's one province that's run out of their allocated budget for NHLS, and now will it be uncollectible? There's going to be accruals going forward. It's very problematic. And maybe we need to go back to the funding model, because if you look at the total amount of money in the health sector from a national budget, it's $168.4 billion. That's the equitable share plus the national bond plus the conditional bonds. Your revenues are $6.4 billion. So that's less than 4% of that. It's a fraction of that. Even in the equitable share, it's about 6%. So it's still a small amount. Would it not be more sensible for that money to be reserved in a national central fund? And then purchases will be taken from that fund, even at provincial level, whether it be from clinics to tertiary hospitals. Because then you can be assured a guaranteed payment. It would obviously require amendments to the NHLS Act, concurrence with Treasury, but at least then there will be stability in terms of service payments and ultimately service provision. So, I mean, so this is something we can engage the National Department about, but what are the thoughts of the NHLS in terms of looking at a new funding model that's very stable?
Thank you. I think that was
thanks, Chair. Very briefly, maybe there was a slight misunderstanding. What I was saying is that, I mean, certainly the NHLS is part of the NHI, will be, no doubt about it. What I was saying is that the technologists form the backbone of the workforce within the laboratory services. The scientists are not part of that backbone. They provide some research infrastructure support. The registrars support.
I wanted to elaborate. elaborate on the role of the board now from a different perspective. If my memory serves me well, at the budget speech by the minister, the honorable chair of this portfolio committee raised the issue of the failure rate of medical technology. I was just whispering to the honorable member Ndaba to say, as far as the Medical Technologies Board, because the exam is set by them, the exam for medical technology, I indicated in 2015 that at that time, medical technologies will pass the theory from universities of technology in large numbers. Then they come for what we call experiential training in our labs. And now they have to sit and write what we call the board exam, meaning the Board of Medical Laboratory Technology exam, and that's where they were failing. We have since improved things, and this will be on the report 16-17. As I'm talking now, we had a pass rate of 61%. The interventions were done ad hoc. It's not ideal. Chairperson, your intervention is still needed. It was not an ideal intervention. We just have, by some luck, that the new senior manager in my office for M&E is sitting in the Medical Technologies Board. So it was easy for me to say, now, in that board, can you raise the question of why are students failing in large numbers? I need an explanation, because we are training the largest number in the country. So we have a voice. Can someone explain to me, maybe point areas where we should emphasize the practical part? Because without them pointing to us, we will never know. And somewhat, I think that has changed things. It's not ideal. I cannot guarantee that the next exam will continue along the same path rate. Chairperson, before I hand over to the CFO for the funding model, I just want to comment briefly on what Honorable Member Maisela alluded to as an example of tests done at clinic, even if it's, you know, he mentioned something like that. We are working very hard in preparing for the NHI to be in line, in sync with the National Department of Health. The National Department of Health is talking the ideal clinic, talking NHI at all levels. We are saying, how can we? Besides them, the 8th conference opened my eyes. There were many presentations talking to point of care testing of viral load. Speaker after speaker from country after country, they were all in agreement that to address the issue of upscaling of viral load, in particular, the mother, is it mother to child or early infant? I'm not very clear. The mother to child. But the diagnosis of the baby also, of the babies also. Because there was something like, if they miss that time because of delays in testing, then they've missed. So from my side, that information said, strategize on the way forward. What is it that we can do? So we are brainstorming point of care testing, but how do we ensure quality there? Because it won't help if we just put forensic laboratories and they issue out poor results. So we're juggling both. I just want to say to the honorable member, the item is receiving attention. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks CEO for the answer that you gave now. I think the question that will rise now, Chair, is who appoints that board? You know, because if it's your core responsibility to appoint the board, then maybe as the portfolio committee will have to recommend. Because if you are saying you are not even sure whether the intervention that was done now will assist next year, in the next financial year, maybe as the portfolio committee chair, we can say, we can make a recommendation to say maybe you need to disband and appoint a new board. Or if it's the responsibility of the board, ne, then that means we'll have to make a recommendation as the portfolio committee. But I think, Chair, it's our own, now it's our responsibility to get the facts, you know, make some the research, who appoints that board and what needs to be done, so that at least we can just deal with this matter once and for all. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you, honourable members and CEO. I think we have gone beyond just receiving APP and strategic plans, but looking to the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is about transformation in the health sector, because that's what they. And when we are talking about transformation in the health sector, is because in the main, it's not just transformation for the sake of transformation, but it's to ensure that the social conditions of our people is then being changed for the better. The policy that is in place, the white paper has been out, submissions have been received. What is it that as we are the building blocks and institutions of this nature, in this instance, we're talking about NHLS, is that it's one of the institutions that we want to ensure that it comes to the party. It is a very challenging, but it's a policy that is needed. Again, we are addressing a history within the health sector. And as this committee, we have taken into ourselves that we're not just going to conduct oversight for the sake of conducting oversight. We've unpacked. I'm sure if you can just ask one province, how do they conduct themselves? You'll be so surprised. We open drawers. We ask if there is a specimen lying there. We ask when was this taken. Because we don't just want. We ask even those technicians why they are in a work environment without protective clothing when they're supposed to wear aprons. An apron is there behind the door. He or she is just seated there with, and we know for a fact that each and every health worker in a particular area of work is supposed to, there's a particular norms and standards on how they should. So I'm trying to just put across that we are not just conducting, we're not calling you in front of the committee for the sake, we do make follow-up so that when we stand in the house in a debate, we are not talking about things that only we read in your reports, but we balance that and what we physically see. I think that is then going to be. And in moving forward, we are going to call our entities not only when they are to come, because we don't have time to interrogate some of the things that we think are necessary. And there's going to be a time you must prepare yourself, because again, what Honorable Ndaba has raised in terms of this board exams that are written by these young people, why is it? What is really a challenge here? So we need, and so that we open up for other sectors. For an example, it's the same cry with the engineering field. young people, they said, write an engineer, a board, and an exam, we fail. So here in health, that is what I think we are. So prepare yourselves for a time where we are going to invite you. We say we want this detailed information so that we are then able to change and to assist, not changing for the sake of changing. And we're not saying those children must just be must pass for the sake of passing. No. We can never. But we think we'll have, and we can't have young people that they pass, but when they are to write an exam, what exactly is a problem? So, CEO, in thanking you for the good work that is being done, an unqualified report, audit report, yes, but we have to balance that with what is happening on the ground, so that we are then able to really see that there is a... We know for a fact that Rome was never built in a day, but by the mere fact that health by its nature is emotive. Obviously, as health activists and as legislators, we can't be emotional about it, but it doesn't mean that we are going to fold our arms. We are going to ensure that everybody accounts, from the minister to yourselves, as administrators, as governing bodies, boards. So there will be a time that we call everybody, including the whole full complement of the board. So, Deputy Chair, give that. We wouldn't be irresponsible, won't be irresponsible to just give you, we'll give you much time so that we're able, but we would appreciate that you. We commend the whole country. Everybody was panicking, thinking that the National Laboratory Services of this country is about to collapse. And the leadership that the minister provided in that space, with the challenges that the AG have, but we do think that, and you have also complemented that in ensuring that you provide leadership. National Development Plan is saying the challenges in health has always been leadership. It's not only leadership in hospitals, in our view, leadership right across even in entities. And therefore, the issue of leadership, the issue of skills will always be in our minds as we are conducting our constitutional responsibility of ensuring that everybody accounts for the work that you are doing. And I think without being, and in fact we need not be apologetic about it, we know for a fact that when a woman is given a responsibility, tough as it is, we can show the world that we can do it. And I always say in closing, you know when you know that old, Dr. Fromis, primer stove, so when you cook a pot of millet on a primer stove, when a male comes, that you will say, oh, there's something burning, and it ends there. But when a female comes in, the first thing is that lower the flame, and why? You see, so that thing that is always said that we are emotional, and therefore we're not emotional, it's because we're always alert, and we take those risks. And the most of it doesn't mean that males don't do. They wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be males if females were not there. You wouldn't have a home. You wouldn't have a home if your wife was not there. But there's a difference between a home and a house. So that. You have got an institution, not walls, but institution that is then saying that you are swimming, you are no more sinking. Thank you very much. Lunch is, if you are able to join us, lunch is served, and at 1 o'clock, join us. Thank you very much. Honorable Maisele, we are closed.